This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division 2, Division 3 podcast. Matt Kinnear, joined as always by Josh Davey down here in Baltimore and Kyle Devitt up north. Kyle, Josh, fans listening to this podcast, don't gamble based on the advice that we give you from our staff picks. Or gamble, just pick the opposite of what we do. Abysmal day from us for the staff picks. That was just utterly horrible.
I mean, yeah, no, I don't feel bad.
I don't feel bad, but it was just...
nothing to be proud of.
It was just not something to be proud of, yeah.
Well, I tend to pick with my heart, not my head, for D3. So, that's my excuse. And also, like, a lot of teams up here that I know the most about haven't even played yet. So, that's my defense. I don't know what you guys' defenses are. I'm sure they're better than that, though.
Well, there was one D2 game, so not as, you know... into that necessarily, not as, you know, buttoned up as I should be. And then I go with my heart every time when it comes to the Hornets. And then Springfield was one of them. So of the, you know, there were three that were going to go one way or the other. Two were basically going to be guesses, and the other was going to be one team regardless of who the opponent was. So when you look at it that way, I'm not too salty about it.
Springfield Nazareth was the one that there's no way that should have been unanimous in favor of Naz. I had heard that it wasn't the most talented Nazareth team, but they were the hardest working. So I gave them the nod based on that alone. But, you know, Springfield is obviously, I think, clearly a much more talented team and a better team. And they got a big game coming up this weekend as well.
They graduated a lot of seniors, which was sort of the way that I was leaning towards the Flyers on that one. But, hey, man, you live and you learn. We'll move on.
Well, with Springfield, I mean, I explained it last week on the podcast. They're in the school that I played at, Clark's Conference, and I played against them three times, and I hate them. And that's part of the D3 life, is holding grudges. I'm just going to be honest with you. And Josh knows, right? Be honest. There are teams that you can't stand.
100%. This is the same argument as, like, Dixon talking about the rules and whether you need to give one to someone. Hey, I've called three on red. When are you going to give one to blue? Like, yeah, of course. Like, my favorite teams in the world are not the Roanokes and Stevensons, but I also will pick with my head with a lot of those and know how great programs they are. But sure, there's disdain for a few programs out there. I'm not going to pick against them unless they're playing, you know, my squad. But no, I'm with you. I think that's a very realistic comment to make.
Kyle,
I'm also more ruled by my emotions than you are.
I was about to say, you're not one to hold grudges, are you, Kyle?
I'm all about it. I think it's great. I think that, you know, it's an important part of the differentiation of telling the truth and being real in media, and then just like, oh no, I got this wrong because of this. No, I got it wrong because I got a grudge. Sorry. And honestly, I don't have any grudges for D1 teams when I pick. And if you listen to the In the Crease podcast, I kind of explain my process for that, which is far less involved, I think, than even D2, D3. But I'll cop to it here. I don't think it's the same for picking other games or even pro games, but it's 100% a lot of heart picking D2, D3 stuff. That's also why I picked St. A's, because I could drive there right now and it would take me 5 minutes. So it's a New Hampshire team. I'm going to pick those too. Sorry.
Well, speaking of the grudge life, let's go look at the Division II results from this past weekend. And the first one that I want to highlight, Lemoyne 14, Seton Hill 10. The Dolphins had a grudge with Seton Hill. Seton Hill knocked them out of the NCAA tournament a year ago. You know, this is a Seton Hill team that I think I've said many times on here, I think is a national championship caliber team. Lemoyne, though, is, you know, there's not a coach that I respect the process and the ability of as much as Dan Sheehan. You know, he's kind of the D2 equivalent of what I say about Jim Berkman all the time. So you can never bet against them. Lemoyne bouncing back from a season opening loss against Mercy. This was an inverse of that NCAA playoff game. It was the same score, but this time in favor of the Dolphins. For Lemoyne, you have to appreciate some of the new faces who are really contributing on this squad. Riley Smith, he played in his second game, bounced back from a disappointing outing in the first game. He had 12 saves. You know, he played at OCC, Pryor giving his first win as a Dolphin. And then Riley Larson, he had a career-high 4 goals to lead this game. I love the way that LeMoyne battles back, not only battles back from losing to Seton Hill a year ago in the NCAA tournament, but also bounces back from their loss to Mercy just last week. And then even within this game, you know, they had the lead early, but Seton Hill came back, tied it up. LeMoyne always had an answer. That's the sign of a well-coached team, and that's what you get with Dan Sheehan's squad. Limestone with a 13-10 win against Mercyhurst. Limestone is, along with Belmont Abbey, establishing itself, no surprise, as kind of the South team to beat here. This is a big win. I remember talking to Coach Randy Mearns from St. Bonaventure, and he scrimmaged Mercyhurst in the fall. He said then, that's a national championship contender in Division II, and I trust his opinion a lot. So this is a good win for Limestone. They won nearly every faceoff again, which, you know, if you're a team in the South, you thought that you were done with those years of Limestone winning every faceoff. No, it might be two guys who are splitting faceoffs, but they're still pretty much winning them all. Tampa 16, Lenoir Ryan 10. Tampa, you know, responded a loss against Belmont Abbey with two really good South wins so far, 25 of 30 faceoffs in this win. That's kind of a theme here in Division II, is some big face-off performances. Kyle, any thoughts on Tampa?
Do they play the pew-pew-pew every time Andrew Q scores? That's what I want to know.
Well, that would be like a million times, because he scores all the time.
Right, because if you don't do that, you're welcome. Like, I got to see that. Tampa's offense has always been very respectful, and, you know, I think that loss to Belmont Abbey early kind of galvanized this team a little bit. And they have a big in-conference matchup against, I believe, Florida Tech coming up this week.
Also coming up this week for them, depending on what time you're listening, you know, either get by a computer and start watching it, or check out the box score at 12:30 matinee they have against Adelphi this Wednesday. So that's definitely an awesome North versus South matchup. Adelphi is down there in Florida right now. They took care of St. Leo, the national runners-up last year, 22-10. Adelphi, for some reason, has flown under the radar this year, as, you know, it's a D2 program that's always been in that top five conversation. Last year, we did a big story on them in the preseason about their face-off specialist and just their ability to kind of breed face-off specialists year in, year out, led by Coach Gordon Purdy. This year, they just haven't had a lot of ink done about Adelphi, and they're really flying under the radar as much as any N10 program can, and really rolling so far in the early part of this season. Nicholas Rakabatu and Gordon Purdy Jr., goalie Brendan McDougal, having really, really strong games early. So if you're listening to this and it's not yet 12:30 on Wednesday, get by a computer and catch the live stream of this one. That's a good North versus South matchup. Those don't happen as much as I feel like as they used to, given how much the in-region stuff matters so much to your end-of-season ranking. So good to see that, and I know that trip has been an important one for Adelphi in years past, not just for, you know, the win and loss record, but also as a way to kind of get the squad together, get a road trip, get on a bus, get on a plane, whatever they do, and really get to know each other and kind of build some chemistry there. D3 weekend, first of all, we got to talk about, you know, Springfield deserves some love after none of us picked them. Just drubbed Nazareth 19-7. That was just a pretty one-sided game. Any thoughts on that?
Nothing that I care to share that I haven't said before. I can't stand Springfield. Like, I'm sorry. And the thing is, it's like the same coach as when I played, and I feel like that adds like more animosity, even though I don't have any towards the actual coach. It's just the players and the school. But it's like, oh, this connection still exists, so I'm just like, ugh. So, I like growl. Like the whole thing with the Wheaton kid in the helmet, right? The Wheaton goalie that can't find a helmet that fit him. I was like, oh, this is a great story, because I'm the gear editor. And then I'm like, but Wheaton.
You're
like,
North,
it's the same mind. Like, it's the same thing.
Hey, man, respect the transparency and commitment to the grudge that you've got. Springfield, though, in this game, some really big performances, 22 stops from their goalie, Cole Finnerty, which is just tremendous, especially in a game that's, you know, this one-sided. You could imagine it be that he's just not seeing any shots, but he had 22 of them. You know, this could have been closer by that definition. Joe Hawley from Washington State, he had 7 goals and 2 assists in this game. Tommy Nash from New York, 3 goals and 2 helpers. Reason I'm saying all these locations is geographically diverse contributors that Springfield got in this game. Cole Finnerty, the goalie, is from New Hampshire. Kyle, shout out. And then Joseph Cameron, he had a really good day at the Faceoff X. He's from Massachusetts. So getting some guys from all over. D3, we're going to see guys from every different part of the country who are playing. Good to see that with Springfield. RIT 14, Bates 12. This one was a little bit surprising to me. Kyle, I didn't really expect this to be a 2-goal game. Obviously, Pete Lasagna is someone who's close to all of us here inside the cross, so happy to see him at least do well and keep this one close. But kind of shocked to see this one be a 2-goal game.
Yeah, I actually went to this matchup last year when it was held at UMass, and it was one of the best atmospheres for a D3 game that I can recall, because you would think that UMass played Harvard before and you'd think that the crowd would leave, but it was actually a bigger crowd, I think, if I remember correctly. And some of the Bates staff were up in the press box with me because they were helping with the video, and it was wild. I mean, there was cheers for everything. It was like watching a Premier League soccer match in a bar that only roots for one team, which I also did this weekend. So it was great. I'm not surprised insofar as, you know, RIT is already rolling, but they're still trying to figure things out. They're still trying to replace losses. And Lastawa is a phenomenal attackman in D3, probably doesn't get enough pub for how smooth he is. He's not huge. He's quick, but like, he's kind of, you know, not quick in a way where he dusts guys. He's physical quick. So he'll take the hit, keep going and score. And, you know, I always root for kind of littler guys. So I'm not super surprised, but it is interesting. And Bates is the only NESCAC school that has played a game already. And unfortunately, they're 0-1, but, you know, putting up a good fight. So that any time a NESCAC school can show out against a really top-tier opponent that isn't in their conference, I think you kind of have to pay attention to that, even though they lost.
Josh, we're going to turn some of the mic over to you for the next few games here. Cabrini, Lynchburg. Cabrini got the win in this one. I actually did pick this one right in the staff picks, one of the rare correct things that we did this past weekend. What's your take on your Hornets, but also on the Cavaliers?
Yeah, this was a game of runs. In the second quarter, Cabrini scored like, I don't know, 5 or 6 straight goals to come out. They were about tied, I think, at the end of the first quarter. They come out, score 4 or 5 in a row, and Lynchburg ends up losing by 3. What I thought was unique about this game is Cabrini has they played a zone the entire game. They're not a team historically that has played a zone. I remember when the shot clock first came out, everyone's like, oh, I'm just going to play zone. And they did, and it gave Lynchburg some problems. You know, it limited them sometimes in transition. Because if you look at the stats, Lynchburg dominated every statistical category, from faceoffs to clears to, you know, saves was even. They had less turnovers. They took more shots. I mean, Lynchburg dominated a lot of this game. I thought the Cabrini shooters were awesome. The kid Jordan Krug is one of my favorite players to watch. He's got long hair. He's got attitude. He was, you know, celebrating after every goal. He had 3 and 2. The Timmy Brooks kid, an attackman, number 13 for them. He was awesome as well. These guys can just shoot the crap out of the ball. I mean, they were really putting into tight spots, making Cornelius work for his 12 saves. I thought Patrick played well in goal. But yeah, it came down to that like 10-minute stretch from, you know, 15 minutes to start the second quarter to about 5 minutes left, and that was sort of the tail of the tape. Both teams have some big games continue to come up, so looking forward to, you know, tracking these programs more forward. But Cabrini, you know, they own that 10 minutes and end up being the difference.
Then the game that was billed as the best two teams in the South going head-to-head, and that turned out to be, you know, fairly one-sided affair. Salisbury 17, Gettysburg 10. Really got to love the way that Salisbury is playing right now. The contributors that they're getting, you know, it's not necessarily just the same guys. Josh, what's your take on this?
I mean, the theme, going back to the Lynchburg-Cabrini for this game as well, and then even the Stevenson-Dennis game we'll talk about next, is it's a game of runs. Gettysburg went down 2-1, and they scored 8 straight goals. I mean, you can't put a a price on the fact that momentum plays in these games and that it is a game of runs, and you just got to sort of wait for yours. Because then Gettysburg went on one later. They scored two or three in a row at some point. But Salisbury just continued to return. They continued to answer. You know, it was a game where Salisbury dominated ground balls. Clearing was similar. At the faceoff X was almost 50-50. Gettysburg had about six or seven more turnovers. Not a lot of saves in this game. I believe Gettysburg only had six saves. Salisbury had seven. So a lot of shots, 37 and 31. But Salisbury, you know, like I said, these little 10-minute stretches and 5-minute stretches can really change a game for them. They flexed a little bit. You know, Matt and I had picked Gettysburg. Devin went with Salisbury. You know, it's funny how a few weeks ago we were talking about Salisbury and like, oh no, what's going to happen? And they continue to prove us wrong. So shout out to Coach Berkman for doing his thing. Pompeo with four goals. Sorry, go ahead.
To be fair, I said that Gettysburg was going to win this one because Salisbury was going to win in May. So that's a little bit of a different story there. Josh, continue.
No, but the names, you're starting to become more familiar with the names, right? Zach Pompeo had four goals. Corey Gwynn, who's sort of been the guy, has 4-2. Tyler Snyder with 3-3. So, you know, putting up 17 goals on a team that we had touted, you know, Gettysburg to have one of the best defenders at Wyckoff and a young freshman goalie. You know, they took their licks this weekend. And don't discount the fact that they played a tough Messiah team the week before, who ended up beating Ohio Wesleyan this weekend as well. That game was not as one-sided as the score may, you know, reveal itself to be. So, you know, Gettysburg's played two good games now. Their schedule continues to get tough. I believe they play Stevenson coming up. So, you know, the gauntlet continues for these D3 top Southern teams.
One note in this game as well, Gettysburg clearing 12 of 19 against Salisbury. Giving them extra possessions is not a recipe for winning in that game. Definitely seen across all divisions some really, really just wild clearing percentages so far in the early part of the season as teams adapt to the new shot clock rules and the 20-second clearing clock that goes along with that.
That is a good segue into the Dennis and Stevenson
game. Oh, here we go. I planned that.
Yeah, right. Well done. So many shots, a back-and-forth game, a lot of turnovers. Stevenson had 20, Dennison had 13. Clearing, Dennison did pretty good job. Stevenson struggled a little bit. But going back to the point I made earlier, a game of runs, Stevenson comes out and starts this game 6-0. Give them a lot of credit because I really, coming off that Ursinus loss, expected this first few games to be really tough for Stevenson because they have as tough a schedule as anyone. But, you know, they get the job done. So credit to them. They went 4-for-7 at EMO, which I think is really impressive. On the counter to that, you know, Dennis and a lot of penalties. You got to stay out of the penalty box. So, you know, those are the sort of, you know, those runs combined with the opportunities to go man up and continue to build momentum. Sort of the tail of tape for these last three games we talked about. Impressive win for the Mustangs.
Can you blame us for picking Dennison?
No,
they were rolling. They haven't lost. Like, Stevenson had already lost, what, two games? Like, are we really off base with that one? Really?
JT,
I mean, maybe we should apply the Abern logic for picking, which is like, oh, everyone picked this game, I'll pick a different team. And that's the advantage you get when you make the graphics, by the way. So,
well,
I'm just,
you know,
letting everyone know.
Talking about the best players, I talked about Krug for Gabrini and Brooks. Your best player's got to stand out in these games. JT Thielen had 5-1 for the Mustangs, leading those guys. They're young, trying to get a couple of names you're not as familiar with in the stat sheet. So, yeah, man, you got to show up to play every single day.
Big few games coming up. This Wednesday is a very, very big Wednesday for Division III lacrosse. Just volume, a ton of games that you can catch. Roanoke at Christopher Newport is one of the ones that I know we'll be watching. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, make sure you check that one out this evening. But Saturday, let's just stick with Stevenson for just a few minutes here. Stevenson at Gettysburg. So this is kind of interesting where Gettysburg, you know, had a disappointing outing against Salisbury. Stevenson won this weekend, but overall, you know, I think we're still not really sure what to think about them given the Ursinus loss earlier. So I don't really know what to make of this game. I think, you know, if we put this one in the staff picks, this is pretty much, you could justify either way pretty well.
Josh? I totally agree. I think the quantity and swagger, the quantity of shots that Stevenson has and the ability for them to like literally just not care. It's just the almost ignorance of like, let's have a take a deep breath here and take it and pull it out. They play similarly. Like, I don't want to give them too much credit here, but watching that Cornell Lehigh game this weekend, I kept making the comment over again, like, Cornell refuses to pull the ball out and take a deep breath. They're just going and dodging and throwing skips. That's the same way Stevenson plays, right? They're let's keep our foot on the gas. Oh, let's slow it down. No, let's slam it through the bottom of the floor. So I honestly, and I've been really high on Gettysburg, but they need to show me something more. Kind of struggling in their first two games of the season. I would not be surprised at all if Stevenson goes there and gets the win, which would be a huge win for them. Like I said, talking about the next few games, because they still have to play Salisbury after that. They still have to play Lynchburg. They have the Mustang Classic. So their schedule continues to only get tough, and it would be a big statement win if Stevenson could get two of these in a row.
Yeah, there's not a team in any division in the country that has ahead of it what Stevenson does right now. It's pretty much, I mean, it's mind-boggling what you're asking of those players in terms of the quality of opponent they're going to be playing. And then just throw on all of the hoopla that goes around with the Mustang Classic. And that's just another added layer of pressure that, you know, to perform. So
to put it in perspective, they play Gettysburg Saturday, Salisbury the next Saturday. Following weekend is the Mustang Classic. They play Lynchburg Friday night, York Saturday night, and then they play Tufts. I mean, nothing else really needs to be more said than that, you know?
Yikes.
Yikes is probably the most appropriate term to follow that slate of games.
Yikes is correct. Also Saturday, we got the Battle of the Ampersand. F&M versus W&L. Definitely should be a good one. You know, W&L is, you know, I think everyone, we've said this the whole time about them. They were a team that was right there with York. They were right there with Denison, but right now they're sitting at 2-2 when, you know, I think they'd certainly much rather prefer to be 3-1 or 4-0 going into this game. It's a game of inches. It's a game of just a few plays here and there, some failed clears, some turnovers. They'd be in a much better spot. So this is going to be a really key game for them heading into this F&M contest.
I like W&L on this one. You know, I got to see F&M a few weeks back when they hosted Lynchburg. They have some great pieces. I think it's going to be a close game. I really think it's going to be a close game. But I think W&L, you can't factor out AJ Withrow and how just of an absolute monster he is. And like I alluded to earlier with Thielen for Stevenson and Krug and Brooks for Cabrini, you need to count your best players. And when you have the best player in the country on your squad, I'm always going to lean towards that team. So I think W&L playing down in Lexington, F&M has to make the long trip down 81 to get down there. So through the mountains, it's a pretty awesome drive, actually. Either way, I'm going with the Generals.
Looking at the schedule, one more game that we'll kind of talk about at some length, and that's Lynchburg at York. Obviously, these are two teams that we've talked about several times on this podcast. That's more just the nature of the way that the schedule breaks out. Starting this week, actually, there's going to be a lot more North action to discuss as the calendar turns to March and more of those teams are playing some high-profile games and the NESCAC starts. Lynchburg versus York, though, this is obviously mentor versus mentee. You know, a lot of connections on those sidelines there. We have Mike Gilbert, who's one of our web developers, who went to both schools. So there's a lot about this game that, you know, we're very familiar with here. I got to say that York wins this game, and I'm going to say they win it, I don't want to say easily, but I don't think the result is going to be in much doubt throughout the game.
Lynchburg just needs to be much more efficient with their possessions. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. You know, the last two games, they've won the majority of the faceoffs and just haven't been able to convert those into goals. No one is going to be more familiar with the Coach Kadelka coached team than Coach Childs is. So I'm gonna wait. I'm going to hold off on my pick for this one. I do think it's going to be a great game. It's up in York. So, I'm gonna hold off until maybe the true staff picks this weekend to see what I actually come down to. But I'm excited to see York and have the opportunity to watch them in a full-length game. I didn't get to catch any of their games via live stream, so I'm looking forward to seeing them play and excited, you know, from what you said, Matt, when you saw them earlier this season about some of these new pieces on defense, a new goalie, And some of those attackmen, the Hunter Davis kid, the McGrath kid, you know, have an opportunity to see them go against Lynchburg's defense. And Patrick Cornelius, who's been playing great in the goal. So I think it's going to be a great matchup. Certainly one I know that both teams are looking forward to and had circled on their calendar when it was released in the fall.
Kyle, do you want to make a pick or a prediction on this one now or wait until we do the graphic?
Well, I feel like every time I've picked Lynchburg, they've lost. And there's like a good
so
part and a bad part.
Stop picking them
then, dude. No. Here, let me finish.
We all want you to stop picking them.
So, like, here's the thing. Do I keep picking them knowing that it upsets you? Or do I flip it and be right? How much do I care about being right versus trolling you? It's a toss-up. I actually can't make a pick right now. I'm going to have to think about it, you know, have some consult with some other people, kind of see, like, where your hierarchy is in the office and how you're doing. So we'll see. I feel like it's down to you, though, Josh. It's not really my decision.
That's true.
You know?
It is down to me. That's true. It's a lot of pressure, but I'm willing to take that weight on my shoulders.
Kyle, with the Scheidenfreude taking kind of pleasure in everyone else feeling pain. So I guess you're going to see how...
Such a
Josh,
typical New England fan there, yeah. Huh?
Grudge life.
The D3 life, the grudge life for Kyle Devitt. Let's move on. So some of the other games that are just... that are definitely worth keeping an eye on. Stevens at Springfield. Let's see how much Springfield can keep this rolling. Denison at Roanoke. And then we have Sunday, OWU at Salisbury. You know, that's a game that, you know, OWU is
0-2.
0-2 right now, which is probably not what any of us would have thought. But again, don't take our word for it so far on this season. Kyle, I want to flip it over to you a little bit because the North really gets underway when... you know, it's the NESCAC. The NESCAC is starting. Bates already has a game under its belt, but the team plays conference play this week. Tufts plays twice. They play Hamilton and Cortland in the span of the same weekend. NESCAC is, I mean, I think you and I would argue, Kyle, this is the way that it should be done anyway.
I totally agree. And I think that, once again, the North is right with what they're doing here. And it is the best conference in the North. Sorry. I mean, it just is. There's multiple winners
every year. It's the best conference in the country.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, saying North too makes it even better. But I really do believe in starting lacrosse when you're supposed to start lacrosse, even though in Division I we've had an amazing first 3 weeks. They're still freezing. You know, I still went to Yale last weekend and, like, can't believe I finished anything without gloves on. You know what I mean? It's wild to play lacrosse before it's 40 degrees. I feel like that's a good measure. And I say that knowing that most of my career, I played when it was like below freezing. I don't remember many games where I didn't wear like a Cold Gear Under Armour mock turtleneck. So, do you know what I mean? I don't think I remember what it's like to play without that. It's wild, but it's also kind of part and parcel of like that hardness that like builds you a little bit, right? And you know, we were saying last week that facilities are a big part of it, and Wesleyan doesn't have amazing indoor facilities, but they still got it done last year. I think it hardens you to a certain degree, but also starting at the right time makes sense. I mean, the only bad part about it is the practice time. You're not getting enough practice time to start out these games strong, but you know, we've got conference play with Wesleyan and Williams like the first game. That's great. I want to see that.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, I did a story on Amherst that was in the February issue of the magazine. We just put it on the website right now. Headline, Amherst Speaks the Language of Speed. It's focusing on Evan Wolf and Colin Minicus. We did a big thing about just some of the best duos in college lacrosse. And these were the two that came to mind right away for me when we started doing this package. You know, it really, if you read the story, there's a lot about, obviously these are very talented players, but, you know, the one thing that really struck me that Wolf was talking about, you know, the brother of Jordan Wolf, who really wants to win a national championship this year in Philadelphia, is because of the NESCAC rules, these guys spend a lot of time on their own together. So there's a greater sense of personal responsibility that's not led by the coaching staff as much as led by the leaders on the team, the players individually on the team. You know, him, Minicus, and John Coffey, you know, they wake up early in the off season, they would wake up early, meet up and watch film on their laptops, you know, before playing wall ball together and going to class and getting along with their day. The fact that it's not directed by the coaches because they can't really do that in the fall really gives them such a sense of ownership of the team and the program. I think that's a big part of the reason why these NESCAC schools are so successful in all, you know, obviously in all facets of when they play. And for Wolf and Minicus, you know, God, those two are just so fun to watch. You know, Wolf's better off the ball. Minicus is a better feeder, but they're just putting up these just mind-boggling stat lines, almost 100 points for each of them. I think 84 for Wolf last year and 90-something for Minicus. So the NESCAC is full of players like this, and Tufts specifically and Wesleyan both have players who are on par with these guys. But I just wanted to highlight them and that story that I did in the February issue. Kyle, Wesleyan is a program that I know you're pretty familiar with. You know, you wrote a preseason story that basically predicted their national championship run last year. Just any thoughts on them as they start their, you know, tour to kind of try to defend this title?
Yeah, probably the luckiest thing I've ever done. I accept no credit for that. It's all down to them. One of the things that I love about them and what the article was about was their defense. You know, I think that in a shot clock era, using that backer zone is more lethal, because the thing that's going to separate good teams from great teams at all levels during this adjustment period for the shot clock is the defense and the ability to stack your stops. And no one stacks their stops better than Wesleyan. So that's why Wesleyan was our number one pick going into this season for the Faceoff Yearbook as well, and why they're number one in the poll. Because I feel like everyone knows that, even though they don't have Harry Stanton coming back. They have so many pieces all over the field. They did lose their best defender in Rodriguez, but I feel like they're just ready to come back and just throttle teams. Because the thing, we were talking about the clear earlier, right? And I still feel this way. I think I said this in the first podcast, that the clear clock is going to have more of an effect in Division III, because there are less, I mean, the fact is there's less ball handling ability with a lot of the poles in Division III compared to other divisions of lacrosse, that's, right? And that's one of the things that going to...
Josh is shaking his head right there.
It's team to team, though. Like, it's not, you know, the upper echelon of D3 is they're not going to have as much trouble. I mean, that's a tough comparison to make when the top 20 teams in Division III could beat their 73 Division I teams. They could beat 50 through 73, maybe even higher than that on any given day. I mean, a lot of these teams scrimmage each other this fall. You know, York could beat Bucknell. It's a scrimmage. Take it for what it's worth. But, like, I agree that with 300-some-odd Division III teams, sure, there are going to be a lot of teams that struggle. But the teams that we talk about a lot on this podcast, I don't think it's going to be that much of an issue. I've been to a few of these games. These teams, very, very few times have I seen someone, maybe twice, not be able to get over the shock, not be able to get the line. And if it's been close, the goalie's been able to run over. Like, they're finding solutions. The stick work is not that much drastic. So I don't mean to, you know, sort of cut your rant in half, but, like, there's definitely some validity to what you're saying, but it's not as drastic as I think. At least it's coming off. That may or
it's
may not,
not an
be all your intention.
It's not an all-encompassing statement. It's more of a, there are way more bad ball-handling defenders in Division III than Division I, and that's also by virtue of there being a lot more teams. Totally. But I think that if you're averaging, like, your first pole, your second pole, and your third pole, the third pole in the D3 team is not going to be as good as the first pole on a D1 team.
Of course.
Unless you're talking about the bottom 10 D1 teams, right? And even, like, listen, we're looking at weird stuff happening in D1 too, where VMI is undefeated. So,
right, Lynchburg played VMI statement is and right. Took it to them this right. fall, you know?
Right, your statement is right. I'm just saying that you're going to see that be a factor more in Division III until the teams adjust as well. And I think that there are teams, you know, in the NESCAC that don't have great poles and are going to struggle. I think the other thing, too, is it's down to goalies as well. You know, we had Evan Malloy from Syracuse on the In the Crease podcast yesterday, and he was telling us that one of the things that is different is how involved the goalie is in the clearing game now, because He can't sit back and just toss it off to a pole. He's got to be able to advance the ball, walk the ball up, and that's a skill set that not every single goaltender has, from regardless of your division. So I think that the nature of the game is changing, and when you see that much change in any sort of league, there's going to be an adjustment period. And I think with, especially, we were just talking about NESCAC here, right? There's going to be an adjustment period within the NESCAC where I think we're going to see some wild results early. I don't think every favorite is going to win every game in that conference at all. I think Colby's got the ammo to pull an upset. I don't know if Williams can beat Wesleyan this weekend, and I would be surprised if they did. But if you look across the board, it's going to be which teams adjust to this better, which teams' coaching staffs prepare their players better with this limited preparation period going into these kind of first weekend of March games. And I think that's really what I'm kind of trying to look at going into things. And, you know, I still believe in the power of the NESCAC, and, you know, the Empire 8's a great conference, and all the conferences in the South are great conferences. But one of the things that's going to separate good from great is the ability to clear the ball consistently.
Also, some Wesleyan fan has to make a t-shirt that says "Stack Your Stops." I love that.
No, that's ours. We copyright inside
copyright. Copyright. You know, with the shot clock and the new rules, you know, my favorite thing that I've seen in games is, and this has happened before, but it's just exacerbated a bit now with these new rules, is when the defense forces a shot clock violation and the bench just going absolutely nuts. That is such a momentum changer that has kind of been created through this new rules. And like you said, if you can stack your stops and do that three times in a row or three times in one quarter, your bench is on fire. Your whole team is on fire.
And to go back to the point we were talking about earlier, all these games, the momentum building and going on runs, these are the difference between wins and losses in 2- and 3-goal games for top 10 teams. So look at that. It all comes full circle.
Well, that's as good a time as ever to close this edition of the Division II, Division III podcast. We will put our staff picks on our Instagram account, hopefully better than this past weekend, but we'll do our best. And thanks for listening. Make sure to go into the IL store, get the D3 Life shirt, and we're going to have a D2 Life shirt on there very soon as well, and maybe get some promotions out there for the listeners at some point. So take care and have a great week.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.